Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Social Value, a podcast where we explore what creating value for society means and the practical ways you can go about creating it. My name's Sarah and my guests work in different areas of social value across public, private and third sector organisations, from public sector procurement to ESG and sustainability, social enterprise and impact measurement. I'll be asking them about their work and what they've learned, and they will be sharing their tips and experience to help us all make our organisations better.
Today I'm talking to Steve Hill, Commercial Director of Auticon, a global IT consultancy and social enterprise, whose mission is to improve the employment prospects of neurodivergent people. Steve, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Can I start by asking you, what is Auticon and what do you do?
Auticon, in simple terms, is a social enterprise. So we're not a charity, we are a social enterprise. So that's very much a case of our social mission driving everything we do. So we've been around for 13 years, which is quite a long time in terms of social enterprise terms, but also in terms of neurodiversity as a whole. We're now in 15 countries, many countries across Europe, Australia, North America, Canada. So we are mightily ambitious, but we are very much driven by social impact, and that drives everything we do. So our social mission really is focused on two things. The first thing is creating employment opportunities for autistic adults. We were actually born and formed out of a parent's anxiety for their child. And the second part is much more broad in some senses. It's really about creating awareness and education around neurodiversity as a whole. So we very much sort of take this idea that lived experience is under guidance is a key to actually changing attitudes and shifting perceptions in the workplace. So the stats in the UK, certainly, and I think this is probably true across all Western countries, for all adults in employment with autism are fairly sobering. So only 29% of autistic adults are in employment, and that includes the underemployed. So there's a long way to go. And we very much focus on really helping those individuals transition from education to the workplace, but also those folks that maybe are in positions, you know, commensurate to their skills and academic experience, but actually aren't necessarily finding the right levels of support. So our role really, as ambitious as we are, is really to enable our clients to do what we do. So think of it really as, by using the IT consulting method, it's really similar in some respects to learning to swim by reading a book. Education and awareness and all of that support is great and necessary, but there's nothing like, or quite like, jumping in, getting your feet wet under supervision and really getting stuck in. I think the kind of difference for us is that it's really about mitigation of fear and risk. So by working with us, we're taking that conversation away from our client, in the sense of by having a diagnosed and disclosed individual with autism as part of a team, then fundamentally we are mitigating that fear and risk of doing or saying the wrong thing. And so we're not only providing a really formidably talented individual into that project, but actually this is about starting a much wider conversation around neuroinclusion and giving practical advice and help on the ground as business as usual, essentially.
And in terms of the creation of the employment opportunity, so you do that by recruiting and training people with autism to become IT consultants, is that right?
Essentially, yes. I mean, people that join our consulting team effectively have a STEM background, not necessarily degree level, and in many cases way beyond degrees into MSCs and even PhDs. So they've got that academic background. They've also got the technical skills. We need that. And many of them have been obtained obviously through that academic training and background, but also they have that cognitive skill set as well. And what I mean by that is, with the IT roles that we tend to focus on, and it's largely data related for the most part.
I was going to ask you what roles you're focusing on.
Yeah, a big part of what we do. So everything from sort of data wrangling through to data visualization, simulation, predictive, prescriptive analytics, and AI and machine learning as part of that as well. And people with autism, and I'm being really careful not to generalize, but I end up generalizing to an extent. But those people with those backgrounds who come to us, they tend to have enhanced cognitive abilities, which make for a really potent combination. So we're talking about things like logical analysis, pattern recognition, sustained periods of concentration, attention to detail. So again, if you're thinking about data, or indeed cyber, where you're looking at anomaly detection and things like that, very practically speaking, those skills, they do create a very potent combination. Combine that with open, honest communication, very factually based. It's an amazing talent pool that actually is largely, not deliberately, I might add, but largely being unrecognised.
I'm quite interested in that 29% statistic and what sits behind it and why is it so low, given that so many people with autism do have this amazing skill set. What do you think the causes are and how does Autocon kind of overcome some of those barriers?
So I guess, again, being very careful not to generalise here, and not everyone with autism has a predisposition towards data and analytics and the IT function in general. But I think largely where a lot of those gaps and blockers exist is actually through the unconscious bias of existing recruitment processes. So if you think about talent acquisition at the very start of the process, you might read a job description that sort of says that person has a requirement for 5 years Python experience or C++ or whatever the technology is. Someone with autism that reads that may only have 4 years, 11 months and 29 days. Without sounding flippant, that may be a blocker to them even applying. So again, it's the language that we use. And again, it's the unconscious bias that's baked into the way that we even try and attract talent. And then if you look to the process of taking those individuals through, you know, typically a face-to-face interview. Now, big companies have got a lot better at this, I might add, but still, we probably all have examples where we've gone along to a face-to-face interview. We don't know who we're meeting. We might have one point of contact. We don't know how many people are going to be there. We don't know their roles. And most importantly, we don't know what questions they're going to ask us. And so you suddenly look at that somewhat, you know, fake environment.
I never thought about that. If you've got autism, you don't know what questions are being asked. That's really difficult for you.
Exactly. So there's that extra processing time required, not only to answer the question, but it's also about answering the question in the way that that person believes should be answered. And the processing, extra processing time required to do it. Because quite a lot of this is trying to fit into a predetermined process and not actually giving a clear, unambiguous answer, which is what a lot of autistic people want to do, that open, honest communication. But that doesn't necessarily fit with how interviewers want to receive the answer. This is a shop window where arguably there is no correlation between how someone answers the question and embellishes and effectively puts forward how they sell themselves and how good a data analyst or data engineer they are. None at all. And so you're creating this very fake environment. And if we think about dynamics and dynamics in the workplace and, you know, teams and what makes a diverse team, compare it to financial portfolio management. You have a spread of assets such that if there's an economic downturn or market conditions deteriorate, you don't lose all your money. And fundamentally, what we're saying is organizations need to think of it in similar terms. This idea of neurodiversification protects against homogeneity of perspective. So it gets away from the fact that there's a certain type of person that does well in an organization. Now, we all recognize examples of where that may be the case, but actually that doesn't actually create the best outcomes for that business or that team or that project.
And you work with some quite big companies, don't you?
We do. So we're quite prevalent in the financial services sector, in banking and insurance, but also professional services. And as you might expect, in sort of tier one tech as well. We're also permeating into various aspects of government in some respects through partners, but also directly as well, where this type of thinking is becoming a lot more commonplace, but actually it just needs that little bit of guidance and a helping hand to make it more acceptable, such that, you know, coming back to this point about the fear of doing or saying the wrong thing, it's easier for us to sort of shoulder that aspect rather than someone that's an existing employee.
and the mentoring and the, do you provide coaching and support to your consultants?
Exactly that. So we're not just about, you know, dropping a consultant into a project team. The secret sauce for us really has been what we call job coaching or neuroinclusion coaching. So that person, they're not technical, they're not project management, but they all have a background in psychology. So they will make sure that that person gets a soft landing. And again, it's that idea of kind of training on the job a little bit, but by doing, not just showing. And so preparation of what best practice might look like, getting everyone on the same page. What is neurodiversity? Because not everyone has some awareness of it or understands the components of it and perhaps where autism fits. So we cover those bases.
With the neurotypical team members, you mean, before
exactly.
The consultant arrives?
Exactly that. And then we bring it very much down to that individual. So what might be some of the modest adjustments or accommodations that would make it huge benefit to our consultant? And that could be, Sarah, you know, things as simple as camera on, camera off on a Teams call, or mm-hmm. understanding the construct of the team and their backgrounds, and having a workplace buddy, you know, who to go to in terms of logging time or expenses, all the kind of day-to-day stuff.
Most people need that.
Well, exactly. And that's the point. Everything that we suggest has a consequential benefit for everyone, not just our consultant. You know, in IT terms, having a daily stand-up meeting, commonplace. But actually, what are the unwritten rules of the office and that specific environment? Is the job of our consultant to listen only, to question, to challenge, to present? It's these subtle nuances that can be a great source of anxiety. But actually, if you attack them head on and everyone's very clear about their role, it makes a massive difference. And that consequential benefit affects the whole team positively.
Yeah. And what's your ideal sort of client? So if someone's listening to this and thinking, oh, I wonder if their consultants could come into my business, what kind of projects do you work on? What kind of clients are you looking for?
Any client that has an IT project that fundamentally requires some help with data analysis, data visualization. We do a lot in DevOps, quality assurance, testing, and as I mentioned earlier, cybersecurity as well. So anything that actually requires some project augmentation with a consultant, or possibly two, or possibly three, for a duration of time. What's not quite so good for us is projects that might require a bit of help for 2 or 3 weeks or 6 weeks. What we like is a reasonable chunk of time, not just to get our teeth into the physical project, but actually for all the consequential things that we're doing around the job coaching as well. So 6 months for us in an IT project with a heavy data content, that'd be amazing.
That's your happy place.
Yes.
I mean, it must be so rewarding. Have you got some amazing success stories?
We've got lots. I mean, one or two really do stand out. And what tends to happen in all of our projects, actually, Sarah, is that we create case studies by stealth. Because what we want to do, even after a 6 month engagement, is we want to be able to turn around to that organization and really very politely say, look, it's not difficult. You know, there's no excuse to not do this. But there are some guardrails and there are some things that need to be followed. So that's very commonplace in all of our projects. But where we see some real standout examples is that one of our consultants actually was diagnosed a little bit later in life. The consequence of that is that diagnosis helped him make sense of a lot of things that came before us in his career trajectory. Quite a lot of bullying instances over the years. And he actually came to us, despite being, you know, fully qualified academically, from a call centre. And before that, delivering pizzas. So again, roles that weren't commensurate with his skills or his ability. And he came to us. He's been in post for about 3 years in a large international insurance company. And he is now an advocate and a voice internally for that client. But actually, he is thriving as a data analyst in that environment, which is just phenomenal. What we don't want to do is to take people out of roles where they're thriving and just say, come and work for Autocon. Because it's a consultant model and you'll get to work on some really cool projects. Yes, they will, but it's a zero-sum game for us. We really want to make a difference.
How do you find consultants? Where do you get them from?
Interestingly, it's one of our biggest challenges. So we have a very focused recruitment model. Typically, we spend a lot of time with certain universities, again, close to where We have offices, so Edinburgh, London, and recently Dublin, but actually also universities that really have a propensity for the courses that align themselves to the work that we do ultimately, which makes perfect sense. But fundamentally, what we want to be able to do is to, thinking ahead, is to be able to create a pathway from education directly into the workplace. And I choose my words very carefully because that might not directly include Auticon. Yes, we may take a cohort and some of those people may filter through and end up being Auticon consultants. But what we want to also do, and this comes back to this idea of social impact, is to create a pathway where we do take on a cohort of individuals, and not necessarily at degree level, but we give them access to training, certification, and maybe proprietary training on particular technologies through some of our partners. And therefore, we create a pathway where they can join an organisation. We're not a recruitment agency, so the idea would be that there's not a fee applied. But actually, what we do is to create some support services to make sure that that person is fully supported when they go into the organisation. And we can start that conversation around your inclusion as part of that as well. And eventually, I mean, the grand vision is that we won't just be in IT. We will take baby steps out of that kind of nucleus into other disciplines. So things like actuarial science are very closely aligned to data science in many ways. And if you think about actually, again, a couple of steps removed, we start to think about different sectors entirely. And eventually it might be architecture, media and the creative arts. It's everything.
Is that your academy that you were just talking about then? That
exactly.
Exactly. Is that something that you're developing at the moment?
We are developing it. We're not quite there yet, but it's absolutely in our roadmap.
If there are companies out there listening that think, oh, that would be great to have, we'd like to partner with you or work with you or have people come through the pathway into their businesses.
We love the conversation because there's baby steps to get there as well in terms of, you know, providing access to some of our talent pool that can actually come in, do some of that same certification. It may be that there is a smaller cohort that needs to come through the Auticon route, but actually by adding partner proprietary training in particular technologies. So a big shout out to any tier one tech vendors that actually, you know, have those partner programs and education programs. We'd absolutely love that conversation because what it means is that we can add those specific skills. Our consultants become wholly marketable and they can take those skills with them, but actually we can redeploy them into projects requiring that specific technology.
So in terms of plans for the future, what have you got coming up and how can people reach out to you if they're listening and they think, oh, we'd like to work with them?
So plans for the future, it's kind of more of the same. I keep sort of coming back to my point really about we are mightily ambitious from an evangelical point of view. This isn't just about us providing lots of consultants into lots of businesses. That's part of it because of the 29% number. There's a long way to go. And hopefully in our modest way, we can become a conduit for that. But actually in sectors that don't require IT or there isn't a requirement for IT consultants, this is about us helping to enable those clients to understand where they might be on their path to neuroinclusion. There's a lot of good reasons, Sarah, why, you know, compliance and risk mitigation around, you know, disability discrimination means that companies can't afford to ignore this. You know, neuroinclusion is something that has a compliance aspect to it. And so there is a duty of care, arguably, for organizations to really want to look after, you know, their neurodivergent employee base and provide the tools to be able to support them before they get to the point of being able to actively recruit and bring new people into the business. But this isn't just about doing the right thing because it's a nice thing to do. There are business case reasons that support it. And that's really a big focus area for us. It's about training. It's about supporting individuals, enabling the individuals through training in organisations. But at the same time, it's baking in some of these processes, principles, procedures into the organisation itself. So make it impervious for many, you know, transitory individuals in HR or D&I or managers. It's about making that long-term societal shift.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. And you're on LinkedIn if people want to get in touch with you, aren't you?
I am indeed. Yeah.
We'll put your details at the bottom of the show notes. So you're looking for companies who would like to use your consultants, have some training or support for their staff?
Yes. And a lot of what we do is helping big organisations around the Social Value Act as well, especially government and public sector, helping them to be able to bid for those contracts and helping to craft their bid submissions when it comes to the social value component.
With an offer from you guys.
Exactly.
Perfect. That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure everyone will find that really useful.
Thank you for having me. A real pleasure.
That's all for this episode of Let's Talk Social Value. We hoped you gained lots of insight around the additional value that employees with autism can bring to the table, especially in sectors such as IT. A big, big thank you to Steve and to Autocon for joining us, and highly recommend reaching out to them. For more insights and tips to help you deliver good social value, why not sign up to our monthly newsletter, The Social Value Files? You can subscribe for free at samtala.co.uk. Samtala is your social value secret weapon, working with public sector bid teams to develop innovative, high-scoring social value strategies and bid responses without compromising profitability.
I'm Sarah Stone. See you next time.